Ladies, at Essentia Health, you're not just a patient. You're a partner in your healthcare journey. We'll get to the heart of your health questions, even the ones you're embarrassed to ask. We'll find solutions to fit your unique needs and lifestyle, because here, we're in it together. Feel confident in your care and in yourself. Schedule a women's health appointment with an Essentia Health provider today. Click the banner to learn more.
They said it couldn't be done, but we're back.
Is that what they said?
I don't know if they said that or not.
They said that Baron and Leonard cannot come back.
They laughed when I sat down at the piano. That was an old advertisement, too. I just quote old things at random.
Okay,
but what's new is this episode of Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn.
Yes, indeed. I'm Baron Vaughn, and this is Leonard Maltin.
That's true. We're both here. And we've got an interesting lineup of films today.
Yes.
And we're calling this episode Women Behind the Camera. Interestingly, there was just a news story the other day based on the fact that the ACLU has done an actual investigation of the status of women in feature films in particular.
Yes, they feel like they can prove discriminatory practices in the workplace.
And that the number of women directing films has actually gone down.
Yeah, since the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a startling and discouraging statistic. You know, if you dig into movie history at all, it's fascinating that in the earliest days of film, women were very prominent. I'm talking about the early 20th century folks, the silent film era. They were very significant as writers, as directors, as editors, not that many producers, some, but a lot of writers and directors. And it's fascinating to see that as the industry kind of solidified and then codified, women were gently pushed aside,
yeah,
and or not so gently pushed aside, so that only a handful of female directors from the past. There's a new book on Lois Weber, the pioneering silent film director, the great silent and sound film screenwriter Frances Marion. It's the subject of a great book by my friend Carrie Beecham, and a good documentary too, with the great title Without Lying Down. That's the name of both the book and the documentary. Dorothy Arzner, another pioneering female director who later taught at UCLA. And one of her students was Francis Ford Coppola. So it's interesting how some of these things have a continuity to them and things pass on through the years. And then famously, Ida Lupino, a very talented actress, decided she wanted to direct. And because she had a little clout and was married at the time to a producer, they formed a company together so that she could direct films, and did some very provocative little films in the late 40s and early 50s. And then she did a lot of episodic television too. But even she had to fight for it.
Right, right.
Nobody laid out a red carpet at that time. And it's been a struggle ever since for reasons that are inexplicable.
Yeah, I just actually had the fortune of working with two modern day female directors, one of which is Lena Dunham, who all I can say is I am wholly impressed by that woman. Mm-hmm. And then a friend of mine, Pollyanna McIntosh, who some of you might know, she acts a lot. She was in a movie called The Woman, for instance. And but she has to prove to some people across the pond in Ireland that she can direct.
Yeah.
Because it's just not as – the setup for her, the structure for her is not as easy to get in as everybody else.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, and we didn't plan it this way, but I suppose – in a larger sense, it's not coincidental that the three films we're discussing today were made by women who also wrote the screenplays.
Writer-directors.
And I have particular admiration for people who do that of any gender. It's partly because I think it shows a level of passion and commitment that goes beyond a mere credit.
Yes.
And there's just no question, because writing credits are really spurious. The more you learn about Hollywood feature film writing credits, the tougher it is to take any of them seriously, except when it's a writer-director.
Yes, exactly.
When the odds are certainly very strong that's the story they wanted to tell.
And they're writing it visually.
Yeah.
You know, so they definitely have – they see it as they write it, and it's great to see it realized.
Yeah. So we're going to start with a really good one. that, my mind just keeps being blown by how much time has gone by on some of these films.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's 15 years since I first saw Love and Basketball.
Love and Basketball, starring Sanaa Lathan and Omar Epps, directed by Gina Prince-Bythewood.
Written and directed by Gina Prince-Bythewood.
That's right.
And a really good movie. If you haven't seen it, you should. It's awfully, awfully good. And one of the things that's interesting about it is Sanaa Lathan, who I like very much, plays – and oh, by the way, the film is divided into four acts, which they label as
– Quarters.
Quarters, yes.
Like a basketball game, because it's the game of life, y'all.
The first quarter is in 1981. The last quarter is in 1993. So we cover a little over a decade here of time. We first meet the young hero and heroine – or heroine and hero in this case.
Yes.
When they're about 11 years old, I guess?
Yeah, they're very young, and they're new neighbors.
Yeah, she's just moved into the neighborhood here in L.A., and she comes to see if she can join the guys' basketball
game. Yeah, a couple boys playing, and they're talking smack about this new girl that's in the neighborhood, and then here comes this well, they think it's a boy – because of the way she's dressed, and when she takes her hat off, oh no, it's a girl.
Right.
But she schools them all in
That's
the ways
right.
of basketball.
Because she's got game. And she's tough. Even at that age, she's tough. She's assertive, to use a grown-up word for it. But that's what she is. She's an assertive character who repeatedly, continually stands up for herself. And sometimes to her own detriment, sometimes not realizing just how off-putting it is to some people, including members of her own family, how much it hurts her in some cases. She's a hothead.
Well, she's got this – to me it seems that she has this attitude that everyone's going to try to stop her.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's going to discourage her and try to change her, and she knows what she wants, which is to play ball. And she just has to commit to it. But yeah, I mean, it's like you would learn how to play with a team.
Yeah.
She learns how to play with the team in her life.
Yes, but it takes a long, long time.
And it takes a long time for most of us, doesn't it?
Yes, of course. She's on a very steep but very slowly unfolding learning curve. I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah.
So it begins with them as kids.
Yes.
They're kids. And then – before too long, we transition to them as high school students. They're teenagers now, and it's clear that there's an attraction between them. We don't know how deep an attraction how sexual an attraction it is.
Well, at the end of the kid chapter,
yes,
there's essentially a foreshadowing. That's all I can say.
Right.
The kernel of, you know, he asks her to be his girl.
Yep.
They have their first kiss, and then they're immediately fighting and rolling around on the ground.
They're at odds right away, which sums up their relationship.
Yes, it does.
They're come close, push away. Come close, push away. And she does most, but not all, of the pushing. Not all. And that's what's interesting about this film, and what's interesting about the way that Gina Prince-Bythewood sets everything up. And then develops the characters and their relationships.
Definitely,
I think it's a dramatic film with some lighter moments, but you invest in these characters. You're interested in what's going to happen to them. You it's far from predictable what's going to happen. You don't really know.
Yeah, it is one
you
of those.
Don't really know.
And that's one of those things I like about this movie. You know, and it's we talked about Happy Go Lucky, the Mike Lee film.
Yeah.
And in the same sense, there's this feeling of like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'm with it. I'm really into the characters. Hell of a performance from Sanaa Lathan and Omar Epps as well, of course.
Yes. And again, these are layered characters. These are not one dimensional characters at all. They've got a lot going on. There's a lot brewing inside of both of them. She comes from a pretty stable family. Her mother, the wonderful Alfre Woodard,
one of my favorites,
is a housewife, and seemingly content to be a housewife and a mom to her and her younger sister. And she's married to Harry Lennox,
who's a banker.
Another great actor who's a banker. So that's a pretty stable home.
And conservative at that.
Yes, yes. So she's the radical in that home. And you don't know where that comes from, where that streak comes from. You don't know. Because her parents are content with their lives. Her sister seems to be well integrated into the norm of society. She's the odd duck. She's the odd duck. When it comes time that she has to be pressured into attending the prom.
yes.
By her sister, by her mother.
So it gets her a date with the very young Boris Kodjo.
Yeah. And they have to almost force her to go and then force her to doll herself up a little bit, more than a little bit. And of course, she looks great. She's wearing a great dress. She's made up beautifully. Her mother takes great pride in helping her with her makeup. And she's not unhappy with the way she looks that night, but it's somehow not her.
It's not her because maybe she's with the wrong person.
Yes, okay, among other things, yes. So then we moved to college.
Mm-hmm.
And what's—
But real quick, in high school— Both of our
– Oh, yes. The next chapter – exactly. That chapter sets up the fact that they're both
huge,
basketball players.
Huge sports stars at their high school.
Right. And they're both on sort of parallel tracks.
But of course, for our male lead, the path is clearer for him.
Yes.
You get drafted, you know, or you get scouted by a college and then you get drafted into the NBA, whereas she knows that she can get to college. But after that – Big fat question mark.
Well, she hopes she can get to college. She's trying to show off for the scouts who show up from the various big time schools like USC and UCLA, and she wants very much to be drafted. Well, not drafted, but chosen,
accepted. Yeah,
yes, chosen by
scouted.
One of them. Right. Now his track is different because his father is an NBA player. His father played by Dennis Haysbert,
the president,
and played very well by Dennis Haysbert. Plays with the Clippers, and is an NBA star with some nice highlights on his resume, mm-hmm.
And some notoriety.
And his son sees himself as following in his father's footsteps, very closely following in his father's footsteps. His father's kind of his hero.
He idolizes him. Yeah, mm-hmm. A perfect model for him.
Right, and his dad is a very present, very supportive dad to him.
And that's the difference. Like he has. A supportive and a supportive father who's a model for what he wants to be.
Yeah.
Whereas our female lead, played by Sanaa, does not have that.
Right.
She just has this vision of who she wants to be, and nobody knows where it came from.
Yeah. Yeah. So we haven't really given very much away.
No.
These are outline points. That's all. They're outline points. But believe me, I don't think you'll find that we've spoiled any of your enjoyment.
No, it's really
of
in the characters.
Story.
It's really in the characters and the performances. And yeah, we can't spoil that for you.
Yeah. Love and Basketball, a good movie. Now, Gina Prince-Bythewood has had an interesting – oh, by the way, one of the producers of this movie, Spike Lee.
Mr. Spike.
Spike Lee, who among many other things – he's been a teacher now for a long time at NYU, but he's also a mentor. And one cannot help but admire that.
Yeah.
Because that's a great thing to be in any field of endeavor. And he's opened doors. He's clearly opened doors for a number of young filmmakers, including Gina Prince-Bythewood and another young lady we'll discuss later on. So good for him.
Yes.
I mean, big points to Spike Lee for that. Because he started out as a student filmmaker.
Oh, yeah.
And he knows that road. And
he knows how hard it is. He knows the ups and downs. And if he can provide guidance to people and funding –
Yeah,
you know, investors to people who are trying to make their movie, especially if they have a good script, like Gina Prince-Bythewood had,
mm-hmm.
then you know he's like, well, we got to get this out there.
So a little background on her: she's a UCLA film school grad.
And
which is kind of funny because so much of the film takes place at that other school called USC.
USC, yeah.
She's a UCLA grad. She started writing for A Different World. The popular TV series.
Spin-off of The Cosby Show.
Worked on Felicity for a while. Her first directorial effort was a CBS, like an after-school special called What About Your Friends, that won an NAACP Image Award in 1995. That's a big boost for a young filmmaker. And then Love and Basketball, her first official feature, debuted at Sundance.
Oh.
Great showcase. Won an Independent Spirit Award as Best First Feature.
Very nice.
And a Humanitas Prize.
Okay.
This is all, you know.
All well-deserved.
Yes. And that same year, she had an HBO movie called Disappearing Acts that she directed from Terry McMillan's novel with Sanaa Lathan, again, and Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes, who you might remember from Major League, but not Major League 2, where that role was played by Omar Epps,
That's
who
right.
was in Love and Basketball.
It all comes together. All ties up. And Gina Prince-Bythewood has done other films, but they're spaced far apart. I don't want to read too much into that. There are a lot of directors who are choosy, take their time. There are a lot of projects that almost happen and then don't quite come to fruition. Mm. But it's they're big gaps because her next feature, this was the year 2000, her next theatrical feature was The Secret Life of Bees, a film I like also very much, which she adapted for the screen and directed. And if you haven't seen that, that's good too. Dakota Fanning, Queen Latifah, Jennifer Hudson, Alicia Keys, Sophie Okonedo. Very, very fine cast.
Very, very strong cast,
yep.
yeah.
And then this past year, I'm embarrassed to say I missed this film.
Beyond the Lights.
Beyond the Lights.
Yeah,
with,
I haven't seen it with either.
With the talented Gugu Mbatha-Raw and Nate Parker. Again, a good lineup of people.
Yeah.
So
I've heard a lot about it. I know a lot of people who loved
right.
it.
And I know it's just out on Blu-ray and DVD
yeah.
and it's on demand. So if you're curious, it's about a rock star. And sort of beyond the lights, behind the scenes. She's got TV credits galore. She did episodic TV, directed The Bernie Mac Show, Girlfriends, Everybody Hates Chris. So she's managed to carve a career for herself and a good one. And she's a real talent. So I hope she continues to thrive and find other worthy films and television projects to do because she's got it.
Yes, she does.
Just like her character.
Hey.
The one she created for Sanaa Lathan.
That's right.
Who's got it.
Who's got real talent and don't let anything get in your way.
And, of course, it's one of these films now. It's 15 years old. So you go, wait a minute. Isn't that Gabriel Union?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
it is.
Very,
very
young.
Very young.
Very young.
Wait a minute. Is that Tyra Banks?
Yeah.
Oh,
very
yes,
young
it
Tyra.
Is. Yeah.
Regina Hall, I think, as well.
Yes,
yeah.
that's right. That's right. Good, good, good people. So kudos to Love and Basketball. Well worth checking out. You folks, several folks have sent us emails about repeating the titles of the movies that we talk about, and we'll be doing that. And we're trying to get our act together for some social media things so you can go and look somewhere and visually see.
Yes.
But if you go to our homepage at Wolf Pop, every show is listed with the contents, although I'll admit some of our descriptions are coy about which titles
right.
we're trying to
hook you into listening to the episode.
But perhaps now in retrospect, we can actually just post
put
all the
actual
titles.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. A title you won't want to check out is the one we're going to discuss next. We could post it 100 times and we still wouldn't recommend you see it, but we'll get to that in just a minute. Hi, this is Leonard Maltin. And if you can't get enough of me between podcasts, which I can't imagine to be the case, you can always go to leonardmaltin.com where I have a website called Leonard Maltin's Movie Crazy, because that's what I am. We've got a backlog of many years' worth of entries. It's not just current movie reviews. I cover DVDs, film books, which you might not know about otherwise, and journals of my adventures in the movie world, especially going to film festivals and other such gatherings. I have fun writing it. I hope you would have fun reading it. So give it a try at leonardmaltin.com.
Well, we tease him a lot. I don't know why I was. It's what I think about when I think of Welcome Back. I think of Welcome Back, Cotter.
That's okay.
Okay.
Well, there's a tie-in, though.
What's that?
Because that's a television show.
It's a television show, and the movie we're about to discuss was based on a TV show.
I'm glad they haven't made a Welcome Back, Cotter feature film. I think the TV show is nice to remember as it was.
Well, if they make one, they should definitely do it better than Bewitched.
Bewitched from 2005. Oh, my goodness.
Son of a bewitch.
You know, the people at movie studios make decisions sometimes that I just don't get. When you take a famous TV – there's two ways to do this. You can take a show that is still in the
– zeitgeist.
In the zeitgeist, in the current discussion, people's mm-hmm. consciousness because of endless reruns and things. And you can either redo it or reinvent it or just recast it. It's been done many times. There's another Mission Impossible movie on the way.
Right.
And that's working fine. But those films, I think, rise or fall on their quality, mm-hmm. on their inherent quality. It doesn't matter if you saw the original TV series or not, if you know it or not, if you remember the theme song or not. Because sometimes they revive shows that nobody remembers or nobody of the current generation would have any possible acquaintance with. And those are the odd ones to me.
There's actually a scandal right now that people in my age range, the 30 to 35-year-olds, there was a cartoon that we all loved called Gem and the Holograms that has been adapted into a feature film, which has nothing to do with Gem and the Holograms. It's a movie that has nothing to do with the original source material. So why even call it?
Well, I know that's just it. They pay money for the rights to these things.
Yeah.
This summer there's going to be a Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie, for instance.
Right.
Now, the Man from U.N.C.L.E. came along in the early to mid-60s. That's like 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, I'm old enough. I was a kid when that came on, but it was all the rage. Gosh, that was a popular show with my generation.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is still in love with David McCallum because of his performance as Ilya Kuryakin on The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Okay.
And so she's a little wary of this new movie coming out later in the summer. But to most, I would guess.
It's an irrelevant title.
It's an irrelevant title. There's no resonance there. How can there be? It's always been around. It's on DVD. I'm sure one of those rerun channels is showing it.
So, and that's the thing. Who did they expect to be like, oh, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., but updated. I'll go see that.
Right. I don't get it. So with Bewitched, the situation is different. Bewitched has never gone away.
Yeah, it's always been on thanks to Nick at Night, thanks
right.
to reruns,
syndication. It's always been there. So it's safe to say that when they made this 10 years ago, 2005.
Oh, goodness.
It was even truer that it was in the zeitgeist. Well, my daughter grew up watching it on Nick at Night.
I loved it.
And, you know, everybody has fond memories of that show. So you're tampering with something right away. You're tampering with something that people really care about, that they really like, they really enjoy, that's part of their childhood. It's part of a happy rose-colored TV memory.
Yeah, black and white TV at its apex.
Mm-hmm. So you better not mess with it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mess with people's fondest childhood youthful memories.
Or at least do something interesting with it
right.
that you know will—
Right. Now, who did that well? The Brady Bunch movies.
Oh, yeah.
They did it right. They spun it. They poked gentle fun at it, but clearly with affection for the show, knowledge of the show and affection for the show. And so they didn't alienate the fans. They kind of let the fans in on the joke.
Right.
And it worked. Or The Addams Family.
Another example.
Where they essentially just redid it.
Yeah.
They redid it in the same style, in the same manner, but did it on a big feature film
budget.
They
made it a little darker, a little bit more Tim Burton-ish,
right,
and it worked.
With a great cast.
Yes.
With a great cast.
Raul Julia, Angelica Houston, yeah.
Exactly. So there are ways of doing this. There are ways of doing this. The way not to do it is the way they did Bewitched. And who did this? Not just anybody. Nora Ephron. Directed it and wrote the script with her sister Delia, with whom she's collaborated many, many times. And it's what I call a wrong-headed movie.
Yeah, a misfire.
The concept is just a bad, well, in my opinion. In my opinion.
Which is what we're here to discuss.
Right, a bad idea. Why is it a bad idea? Because it's trying to be a postmodern spin on Bewitched, where Nicole Kidman really is a witch. I mean, she's well cast, I suppose. You know, she's likable. She's cute in this movie. She's
underutilized, though.
Right, right.
Even she's the lead of the movie, and they still underused her.
Yeah. Well, she's kind of the straight woman in a sense.
Yeah, to Will Ferrell.
Right. And so she really is a witch who's trying to – she decides she wants to live a normal life. Her father, played by Michael Caine, the always enjoyable Michael Caine.
The always regal.
Is saying you can't do it. You're not going to be able to do this. You don't belong in this world. She says, yes, I do. I'm going to prove it. I'm going to be normal. I'm going to have a house with a picket fence. I'm going to have girlfriends and go to the coffee shop and talk about our troubles and our lives. Not so easily done. But then what should happen? But they are making a new TV version of Bewitched. And they cast a once popular movie star, now slightly on the skids, just slightly at a perilous time in his career, played by Will Ferrell, with an obnoxious agent played by Jason Schwartzman. And they seize the idea of him being the male lead in this show.
Right. They want to build him up And because of his bruised ego, he decides that the best thing to do would cast an unknown Samantha.
Someone who won't grab his spotlight.
Which is – so there's a lot about Hollywood ego in this in this movie, even though it's not – because personally, I think Will Ferrell is so damn likable that I don't unlike him. I don't dislike him in this movie.
I know. It's just – you know, and all this inside Hollywood stuff that's supposed to be very, you know, very pointed and satirical.
But it was also like dated somehow. The Hollywood observations are dated.
Yeah. And heavy-handed.
And heavy-handed.
Heavy-handed. So what happens? Of course, he happens to meet Nicole Kidman.
To stumble upon.
Right. He convinces them to cast her as the witch in Bewitched.
Based on the fact that she can wrinkle her nose.
Right. Little dreaming that she actually is a witch.
What?
Yes. Now, and what do they do in this movie? What do they so foolishly do? They actually even show clips from the original TV show. Don't do that. It just reminds us how good the original show
and
was.
How bad this one is.
I mean, and they show Agnes Moorehead as Endora. They show Paul Lynde. They show some of the other cast members. And, of course, the wonderful Elizabeth Montgomery and Dick York, which just, as you say, just makes these cardboard pretenders look even less interesting than they already are.
And more cardboard.
And we're not talking about, you know, just anybody here.
No,
we're talking
about this is a Shirley MacLaine, cast. Yeah.
Shirley MacLaine, Kristen Chenoweth, Stephen Colbert, David Alan Grier.
You rarely see Stephen Colbert in movies.
And the best ones in the film are Steve Carell, who inherits the Paul Lynde role, and Carol Shelley, a wonderful character actress. I mean, they actually – and she's playing the Marion Lorne part from the original TV series. They brighten it for a little bit, a couple of minutes here and there.
Yeah, Steve Carell's cameo is what makes this movie almost work.
Yes. But gosh, it's just so
yeah, what's
wrong.
What's the word?
Wrong.
Okay.
It's wrong.
I feel like you wanted to say a completely different word and you're like, I'll just go with wrong. This is a family show. I'll go with wrong.
Well, you know, and perhaps one of the bad decisions was hiring Nora Ephron to do it. I think what comes through in part, I suspect she was not a fan of Bewitched.
Hmm.
I don't know that for a fact. You know.
She's not a fan of Bewitched or the industry, and that's what this movie is. It's like a compilation. That's a compilation and a combo.
Yeah.
A compilation of a bunch of things that this person who made this movie seems to dislike.
You know, if you're going to do a parody, if you're going to do a remake, if you're going to do anything like that, I think it ought to be a requirement that you have affection for what you're working with, for your raw material.
Definitely.
And this film betrays, to my mind, either an aloofness or an outright indifference to what they're supposed to be working with. And maybe it's not her fault. I don't know. Maybe it's not her fault. After all, she's a talented woman, a brilliant writer, great essayist. A good director. You know, she's had her ups and downs.
She's made some true classics.
Yes, we're talking about the late Nora Ephron, sorry to say. Died too young. But, you know, made some wonderful movies. Her last movie, Julie and Julia, I liked very, very much. With Meryl Streep and Amy Adams.
As did I.
You know, and she – what's odd is that people remember her a lot for When Harry Met Sally – which she didn't direct, but she did write. And then for the Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail. So these films that so perfectly teamed or seemed to perfectly team Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, the ideal romantic comedy couple for their generation. Though I suspect When Harry Met Sally, from what I've read, had a lot of input from both Billy Crystal and Rob Reiner. Mm. No discredit to Nora Ephron. But that was, I think, a more collaborative movie than the simple credits might indicate. But she's done a lot of good work. But I find that sometimes she seems to back off from big emotions. Mm. She's a little too cynical Well, to buy into the old-fashioned Hollywood sense of a big emotional finish, a final clinch, things like that. She seems to want some arm's length from that kind of
filmmaking. Yeah, and Bewitched definitely feels like there's a lot of distance.
Yeah. So let's put our distance.
Let's put our distance between ourselves and this discussion.
Yeah. Other women behind the camera on this movie, too. Penny Marshall was one of the producers. So was Lucy Wick. They both have great credits, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of Penny Marshall's films as a director.
We talked about Awakenings before.
That's true. That's true. One of her best films. Mm-hmm. And there'll be others, I'm sure, down the road. But this will not be one of them, because once we've discussed this, we're putting it aside for good.
Bye, Bewitched.
For everyone's good.
Twinkle, twinkle, twink.
Yes. Goodbye,
Bewitched.
I wish Bewitched.
I could make it disappear.
We can. That's it. It's gone.
Poof.
But something else will take its place. A really good movie. A really, really good, very small scale movie that you might have missed from 2011. Fairly recent. And we're going to tout its great, wonderful qualities. This is a real discovery, folks. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. This is Baron Vaughn. I want to remind you of a great way that you can help support the show and Earwolf / Wolf Pop at the exact same time. And that is through Amazon. You guys know Amazon? Amazon. Amazon.com. I'm not talking about warrior ladies. I'm talking about the website. Since you hopefully love Malton the Movies at Baron Vaughn, here's a way that you can love both us and Amazon at the exact same time. Next time you go to a shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That's for losers. Instead, go to wolfpop.com/Amazon. That'll take you to the same Amazon you know and love, and all the prices will be great Amazon.com prices you know and love, but we get a sweet, sweet kickback. So you don't have to pay an extra dime, but Malnown Movies at Baron Vaughn gets credit from Amazon. And it really adds up and helps us keep the engineers happy and the microphones well-oiled and greased for us to use them on the podcast. So remember, go to wolfpop.com/Amazon and bookmark that so that every time you need to buy batteries for your Kindle or batteries for your television or batteries for your cardigans, you can go to that website. And it's a great place to get some last-minute presents for your loved ones on your birthday or their birthday. You know, you should get presents for people on your birthday. I mean, they're the ones who help you stay alive. Use our special link and help us earn some cash at the exact same time. That's wolfpop.com/Amazon. Huzzah.
Welcome back to Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn.
I'm Leonard Malton.
And no, I'm Leonard Malton.
Uh-oh, I must be the other guy.
You must be Baron Vaughn. You must be Baron Vaughn.
Yeah.
People stop you on the street and say that all the time,
yeah,
don't they?
Excuse me. You must be Baron Vaughn.
You must be Baron
Vaughn. You owe me $20.
This is a film that when we started discussing this topic of women behind the camera and the title came up, we both just connected our eyes, locked, and said, yes, that's the one we want to include. It's called, well, it's got a title that you wouldn't expect to find on a list of films like this necessarily. It's not a – I mean, you hear the name Love and Basketball – that's like, oh, that sounds like fun. That sounds like it could be interesting and
oh,
fun.
Oh, I like both of those things.
Right. This is called Pariah. Really? Hmm. And I will confess to you, I'll lay my cards on the table here.
Okay.
This came out in 2011, and I didn't get to see it in time to put it on my best of the year list.
Mm.
And it was over
you would have proselytized for this film.
Yeah. It was over the Christmas holidays that I was doing catch-up and trying to see some of the films I had not been able to squeeze in during that December onslaught of movies, that I watched this at home and I said, oh my gosh, I missed a really great one. Pariah was written and directed by a talented young woman named Dee Reese, who just did the new Bessie Smith biopic for HBO.
Starring Queen Latifah as Bessie
Monique.
Smith.
Yeah. So
Monique is Ma Rainey.
Right. So she's just had another big opportunity and good for her. Pariah began as a short subject in 2007 that got her a lot of attention, I think, at Sundance. Mm. And that brought her ultimately to the attention of Spike Lee. I'm not sure where they connected or when, but he again served
Black people in New York
as a mentor and is one of the executive producers of this film. It also introduced me – did it introduce you as well?
To
the young leading lady?
No, I actually knew her. I knew Adepero Oduye. We had done a weird short film a long time ago. She made me a hat as a thank you. She asked me to do a stand-up at a show she did in New York at the Bowery Ballroom. And she made me a hat, a knit hat that got me in trouble at work because people were like, "What is that's too African what you're wearing." So I had to stop wearing it. Law firms.
Oh, well.
That's how those go.
You mean you were a bit of a pariah yourself?
I was a pariah at work.
My goodness.
Because of the star of pariah.
Dee Reese Short got her admitted to the Sundance Institute, which is an incredible training ground and workshop for young filmmakers of all kinds in all different disciplines. From film composing on down the line to acting to writing, directing on down the line. And that's where she developed this feature-length script. And it doesn't look bloated or expanded from anything. It's just a really solid piece of work.
Yeah.
It comes in very tidy running time, just under an hour and a half.
Which is amazing.
Yes.
Because this is a complex film.
It sure is.
It's done very – it's very small, like we said, and right. it's simple. But
and
the
it is
emotionality.
And it is very sexually candid.
Yes.
I mean, in the very first scene, in the language and in the things being depicted. So if you're skittish about that in any way, then maybe this is not a film for you. But just in fairness, I think we ought to say that. But this film's about a girl who is 16 –
17,
living in Brooklyn with her parents and her sister. Her father's a policeman.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother has an office job and a devoted churchgoer. And when she leaves for school in the morning, her mom bids her goodbye. And on her way to school, she changes her clothing.
Yeah, because she's dressed in what her mother wants her to wear.
Yep.
And then she dresses – then she changes into what she wants to wear.
Right. Because, in fact, she's come to the realization that she's gay. And her mother doesn't want to know it, doesn't want to deal with it, doesn't want to face it.
Can't face it at all.
It's, nope.
It's a reality she can't even entertain.
Right. And the girl – her name is Alike, and sometimes called Lee. Alike has already found a kind of a surrogate big sister kind of.
Yeah, a little bit of a community.
Yeah.
Some gay women that she runs with, one of which is played by Pernell Walker, another person I used to know. No one will return my calls anymore, damn it. But she shows her that there's this world of women, but it's very sexual charged,
yeah.
Very sexually charged. And this big sister of hers is all about hooking up with people.
Yeah.
And it doesn't – for Alike, our main character here, it's not where her interests lie.
No. She's young.
She's not interested in anything shallow.
She's young. She's virginal. This is not what she's really interested in exploring. I mean, she's curious. She's definitely curious. And she knows she doesn't belong in this kind of straight-laced world that her mother would have her – would shoehorn her into. So she wants to break out of that, but she's not sure where she is going.
Mm-hmm.
The one outlet she has is she has a gift. She's a really good writer. And she has a great mentor, one of her school teachers, who takes time on her lunch hour to talk privately to Alike and to evaluate her work, her poetry and her writing. And she tells Alike, "I think you can go deeper." Well, how can she go deeper when she can't admit yet to her own family, let alone the world at large, who she is? And that's really the barrier that has to be brought down, has to be, attacked in some way and dealt with. One of the things I like about this film, besides just the look of it, is shot by Bradford Young.
Bradford Young.
Who's gotten so much attention this past
DP
year.
DP to look out for.
Oh, he shot Selma and he also shot A Most Violent Year.
Most Violent Year was one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen. It looks incredible.
Yeah. And this film, for all its simplicity, is well told, you know, visually and every other way. One of the things for Alike is finding out who she is, deciding where to put her energy, where to channel and funnel her energies and her ambitions. Writing is really important to her. Expressing herself is really important to her.
Meanwhile, her mother is noodling, trying to figure out ways to make her daughter more what she wants her to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of pairs her up with a coworker's daughter to walk to school. They both hate it, but little by little start to like each other.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yes.
I won't say more than that.
Yeah. and a friendship blossoms, but one fraught with the difficulties of its own.
Yes.
Kim Wayans plays the mom.
Whew.
What a great performance.
Yeah.
But everybody in this film is good.
It's very good.
And that's one of the things about it is for all its modest filmmaking level, I mean, I don't know what it probably cost, $1.50 or maybe $10.50, but it doesn't show that at all. Everything is very authentic, very credible. I don't think there's a false note in the movie.
It's one of those movies that shows you how much you can do with very little.
That's right. And every character, even incidental characters, are fully drawn and well portrayed. The relationship between Alike's mother and father is really interesting.
Yeah.
And we don't want to give stuff away. But
Charles Parnell, a very, very fine actor, mm-hmm. lives in New York.
They've got issues of their own. And they both have a different attitude toward their daughter.
Yeah.
He sees her as a daddy's girl, and he loves her, and he kind of cuts her a lot of slack.
And one little example is that Kim Wayans' character always refers to her as Lee.
Yes.
And then he always says she's Alike.
Yes.
He's like, did you talk to Lee? I talked to Alike.
Yes, which of course is ironic because Lee can be a boy's or girl's name.
Right.
Whereas Alike is more distinctive.
Very distinctive, yes.
And it's one of the many touches in this film. There's a scene in a neighborhood store where her dad is hanging out with a couple of guys. They're just sitting there, shooting the breeze. But things happen and things play out. And everything
When a very tomboyish customer
yeah.
comes in, one of them has a problem and it kind of blows up a little bit.
Yeah. But you are always with Alike. Partly because Adepero Oduye has a great face
mm-hmm.
that reveals whatever she's thinking and whatever she's going through, and the camera's very intimate with her. You really feel her crises, her emotional crises. You care about her. You're rooting for her at every turn. At every turn, and there's a heartbreaking scene which I will not give away.
No, everyone watch this movie, Pariah.
The movie does not wrap things up in a neat little package. It resolves. It reaches a point of resolution.
Although the resolution is also a big fat question mark.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But it doesn't leave you hanging in the traditional sense.
Yeah.
It's not like to be continued. You could continue.
To be the end question mark? Because Ming wasn't dead.
Yeah. but it's not that. It's not that. It's just the end of a chapter in her life and the beginning of a new chapter in her life. And but not resolved in a contrived way at all. Just like everything else in the picture, honest.
Very, very honest, yes. That's the best word for it. It's a very, very honest film.
There are no superficial characters in this film. They all have color and depth and more than one layer. So interesting. Gosh, what you can do with very simple materials and very little time or money to work with, but good ideas.
Yeah.
Good, well-developed, well-thought-out ideas.
Characters, good writing.
Her mother says at one point, I know God doesn't make mistakes. And that line rebounds more than once and ends up having more than one meaning. Good choices by Dee Reese. I wish her a long and fruitful career.
As do I.
And I hope that Bessie Smith biopic brings her even more recognition and more opportunities.
Awards.
Yeah, yeah, all of that. And it all started with Pariah, first as a short and then as this feature. So that's what we're recommending to you. So let me emphasize that with elocution. In summation, or should I say in summing up?
Did you say summation before?
No, I didn't. I was marble mouth at that moment.
To sum it up.
Thank you. To sum it up. I'll let Baron just say all of those introductory phrases.
Yes, yes. In conclusion.
In conclusion, yes.
We would like to remind you of the three films we have talked to today.
You read my mind. Exactly what I wanted.
Minus
to say.
One film, which is Bewitched. You can avoid it.
You can avoid that one.
But do not avoid Love and Basketball and Pariah.
Two really solid films by very solidly talented young women and women of color. and Women of Talent. And that's how we're wrapping up today's show. We have many other ideas. We thank you for your emails and your response.
And your tweets.
Your tweets and your support. We really value all of those things. And we are going to try to be a little more proactive in setting things up online so that you can see what we're doing and what we have done. And you can listen to what we've done over the past. We're past the half-year mark. You know that, Baron?
Oh, has it been 6 months already?
It's been more than 6 months.
It feels like it's only been 6 days. Every moment with you is an eternity. And I mean that in the worst way.
Apparently
in the best
so.
Way. I'm joking.
We hope to be here for a long time to come. And with your support, we will be. We really do need you to tell your friends, though. The only way we're going to be around is if our audience keeps growing. And so we do count on you to tell your friends. And
stick with us as we continue to grow as well. We have some ideas on how to maybe revamp the format, but we won't tell you those until we figure out what that is.
Yeah, well, one of them will include a live basketball game in the studio where I will demonstrate.
In which Leonard will prove the old adage, white men can't jump, starring Rosie Perez.
I can't do any of that. No, I have no sports skills whatsoever.
Okay.
At all.
Okay.
At all. I didn't even have a good bowling game.
But have you tried bocce ball?
No, I haven't.
Aha!
You think that maybe I'm good at skee ball.
If you're good at skee ball, you might be good at bocce ball.
Oh, my goodness. Another door opens. Another door opens. Oh, gosh. I'm so glad I spoke to you today.
Yeah, me too.
Friends, we'll be back next week. And until then, where can they find you, Baron?
I am at BARVONBLAQ on Twitter. And Grace and Frankie is streaming on Netflix right now, so check it out. And Leonard, what about you?
Me, I'm on Twitter at Leonard Maltin, and I'm online at leonardmaltin.com. Hope you'll join me there. And until next week, we wish you well. Happy viewing, and we'll see you soon.
Hop.
Pop.
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 Wolf Pop is part of Midroll Media, executive produced by Adam Sachs, Matt Gourley, and Paul Scheer.